Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Now, live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. And boy, do we have an echo in our ears right now. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Denver, Colorado, the Democratic National Convention going on here. And with me, sitting here, and Susie, I hope you can talk over an echo. Say hi.
Hi.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We may
echo,
have to.
Hello.
We may have to just pull our headphones away a little bit while we're talking so that we don't get disoriented. That's what I do. But in any case, Susie Turnbull is with us. She is the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee and the number two person in the party, functionally. You and Howard Dean, and we've talked, so many times over the years. At various conventions and other gigs. It's so great to see you again, first of all, Susie.
It's great. And actually, Tom, you're one of the few people, not one of the few people, but one of my favorite people to see when I come to
meetings. Thank you. Actually, I'm just going to take my headphones off.
Okay.
And I'll let Alex over here wave me with the one-minute cue, and we've got a time cue, and I'll let you know. The speech last night by Hillary Clinton, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, she's gotten rave reviews already. I have been unable to find, you know, there's this big media narrative about these angry Hillary voters. I have been talking to people all over here, the hotel, the delegates. I can't find any of them. It seems to me that this was a manufactured, you know, storyline from the corporate media to hype the thing up to get more eyeballs, which actually helped us, I suppose, arguably, to get more eyeballs to TV. What do you think?
I think it's been ridiculous, quite honestly, and so over the top. Because, in fact, Hillary Clinton has said in so many ways over so many months, 2 months now, that Barack Obama is her choice for president of the United States.
Yeah.
What she did last night, which I think is the most important, is that she said loud and clear, it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's not about me. And I think that that's something that I never thought that she felt that it was about her.
Right.
And I think that it's been unfair. So it's, people have been unfair to her. They've been unfair to Barack Obama. They have been unfair to the supporters of each of these candidates themselves.
Oh, I think they've been just trying to gin this thing up, just trying to hype it. And you know, it's the media just gets these narratives.
You know, Tom, I went to two events yesterday, two specific events that were for women. One was, actually several of them, but one was the Women's Caucus. It was from 10 to about 12:30 yesterday morning. We had over 3,000 people there. The 3,000 women were as excited and enthusiastic as I've ever seen them. And this was Women's Equality Day, so we were looking at this as how amazing. How amazing that we have more women in Congress than ever before. How amazing is it that we had our women senators with their checklist for change yesterday at this convention, and instead of just having candidates in the audience running for Senate.
Right.
How wonderful was it that we, at Emily's list yesterday, we had Nancy Pelosi speaking, a female Speaker of the House.
Yep.
And people are enthusiastic about the things that we have moving forward. And I just think that there's been a lot of nonsense otherwise.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Let me just tell you one other thing, Tom. Someone else said this to me, and I think this is exactly right. I have gotten several emails, hundreds of emails, in the last several weeks. And they're from people who I don't necessarily believe truly are Democrats in the first place. They have tried to drum up this story, and I've gotten multiple emails from dozens of people rather than really this widespread disillusionment. Yeah. It's not there.
Susie, can I ask you about, can we get into some kind of policy, political
sure.
policy wonk stuff?
Absolutely.
Let me just share with you, and there's still an echo, so you'll recall when Georgia started bombing South Ossetia, and then the next day the Russians came into South Ossetia and then into Georgia, that John McCain got a huge bump from this. John McCain came out, and he was speaking tough, and he was the cold warrior all over again. We later learned that his chief foreign policy advisor had taken $800,000 from South Ossetia. Now it's even getting weirder. These stories, this is from the Los Angeles Times. Headline, why was Dick Cheney's guy in Georgia before the war? What was the top national security aide to Vice President Cheney doing in Georgia shortly before Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili's troops engaged in what has become a disastrous fight with South Ossetian rebels? Okay, that's in the Los Angeles Times. And then over here, also in the Los Angeles Times, Cindy McCain en route to Georgia. She's on a plane right now to Georgia, John McCain's wife. And I mean, his advisor's in this. I believe that the Republicans believe that if they can restart the Cold War, our conflict with Russia, even in a small way, that that's going to be a real winner for John McCain, because Iraq is a loser and he's got to run as a warrior. So they've got to have a war or a fear, a military fear on the other end. And who else can we military, you know, who else can we demagogue? You know, it didn't work with North Korea, you know, everybody figured out that was kind of a joke. The military won't even go along with Iran. They're getting blowback from their own generals. So let's reinvent the Soviet Union and go after them. This seems to me, I mean, am I in the far fringes of lunatic conspiracy theory here in your mind? Because I don't think I am. I am, frankly, very concerned that we're seeing international foreign policy being manipulated by the Republican Party, by Dick Cheney's office, by, you know, Karl Rove. Was 3 weeks before this invasion of South Ossetia, Karl Rove was in the Balkans with Mikhail Saakashvili for 3 days at the fourth, the sixth annual Yalta conference. These guys were sitting with each other talking 3 weeks before this invasion. Karl Rove and Saakashvili. What the hell's going on here?
And Tom, it's really scary. I mean, just generally scary. And I think that obviously we have drawn a clear pattern line here between John McCain and his campaign staffers, campaign workers, and their lobbying for Georgia. No one disputes that.
Right.
That's loud and clear. I think we're going to find that not only in Georgia, but in other parts of the former Soviet Union.
Sure.
I think you're also going to find that that what we have out there is that with Joe Biden on the ticket, the Republican Party is going to have a really tough time trying to play these games.
Yeah.
Because of his personal relationships. As you know, Joe Biden was in Georgia last week,
right,
at the behest of the president of Georgia to make sure to have some conversations there.
Now, what if,
and it's because of the respect, I think, that he has for
absolutely.
Joe Biden.
Oh, absolutely. But what if Saakashvili is a young guy, he was 36 when he was elected president of Georgia, he was educated at, as I recall, Columbia University, he speaks fluent English. What if, you know, the Republicans went to him kind of under the table, sort of, you know, Karl Rove, 3 weeks before at that meeting in Yalta, and said, you know, if you take South Ossetia, we'll back you up. And, you know, we'll have a little conflict here, and it'll work to our benefit. It'll help John McCain get elected, and we'll make sure that your country gets a couple extra $1 billion in aid. In fact, we might even funnel a few $100 million of it into your personal pocket. I mean, this is how the United States actually did politics in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, down in Guatemala, Nicaragua, and, you know, this wouldn't be new. I mean, this is kind of McKinley politics.
I think it would be really hard for me to comment on that. I mean, I think it's very hard, first of all, because I don't consider myself a foreign policy expert.
Yeah.
I think we're really lucky, because this ticket has a foreign policy expert. Actually, it has two foreign policy experts, people who
yes.
really know their stuff.
Well, Barack Obama negotiated the collect the loose nukes with Dick Lugar.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's why Dick Lugar has been so positive about the senator's candidacy,
yeah.
Senator Obama's candidacy. But I think one of the things that it's important to say is that what we need is to change this country from top to bottom. We need to change the way we've done foreign policy. I have attended some things this week and listening sessions where I am so completely convinced that Israel, for example, is far worse off now than we were, than that country was 8 years ago.
As a consequence of Bush administration policies as much as anything else.
Yes,
I mean, we've just made such a mess in the Middle East.
Such a mess in the Middle East by empowering Iran, actually making Iran the bully in the block, on the block. And Iran always was, but now we have even worse situation, and I think that we've just got to move in a different direction.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, hopefully we can get this all solved. And the simple way to get it solved is elect Democrats!
You got it, Tom. That's why I'm here.
Susie Turnbull, the vice chair of the Democratic Party. You're doing great work, Susie. You have been all along, and I really admire you. Thanks so much, Tom. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
When your book first came out,
Failing
America's Faithful,
you did.
Kathleen Kennedy Townsend,
yeah.
And you were the former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland.
That's right.
And you are a Clinton delegate to this convention. And thank you so much for joining us here today.
I'm so glad to be with you, Tom.
It is great to meet you in person, actually. I loved your book.
Thank you so much.
And I still recommend it.
It's
a marvelous insight into the whole issue of the intersection of faith and politics in America, and just you know what, but in any case, let's talk about the convention here.
Absolutely.
First of all, broad brush thoughts. What's on the top of your mind?
I have loved the convention because there's such excitement about what Barack Obama and Joe Biden are going to be able to do for our country, and that we are going to end this disastrous 8 years of the Bush-Cheney policies.
It's kind of like watching the Death Star fade away.
We are just, you know, the sense that we do not have to be in hock to them anymore. We're going to change our policies, and we're going to make sure that we get the troops out of Iraq. We're going to make sure we have an economy that lifts everybody, not just the top 5%. And we're going to make sure we have health care for all our people. It's just exciting to think about what we can do rather than the frustration of the last 8 years.
Yeah, I agree. I was just talking with Susie Turnbull. She said she was at several women's functions yesterday. And I've known Susie for years. She's not somebody who does happy talk.
Yeah.
In fact, Susie and I were, I think 6 years ago on this program, about the time the show started, we're talking about, you know, electronic voting fraud and things like that. I mean, she'll take on topics that you know, broadly even the party doesn't like talking about. And I have so much respect for her integrity. And she said she went to all these functions, and she could not find any of these. She didn't use the word pumas, I guess is what the press is calling them. But she couldn't find any of the disaffected Clinton, you know, I won't vote for Obama folks. And I have not been able to find. I've been looking for them. And last night on the press, you know, after Hillary's speech, you had Chris Matthews running around the audience going, you know, please, somebody, diss Hillary. Nobody would do it. I mean, what's the deal? Was this an entirely manufactured thing? Or are you, I mean, as a Clinton delegate, you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know, are there a few folks who are like dead-enders out there?
It's not totally manufactured. I've definitely run across a few who are upset. And I don't know if they're where they come from, but I think the fact is that, as you saw last night, the vast majority of Clinton delegates, the vast majority of Clinton supporters are saying, as Hillary Clinton eloquently said herself, this election is not about her.
Yeah.
This election is about the Marine in Iraq. This election is about the woman who's lost her health care. This election is about the guy who's lost his job.
Yes.
What are we doing to help the people this election is not about the politicians. It's about the people of America and the people of the world, actually.
Yeah, it is absolutely so very, very true. I've been doing a one-person campaign here ever since Hillary lost the nomination, or you know, the,
yes,
you know, to have her replace Harry Reid as Speaker, as Senate Majority Leader. You think I got a? Is there any chance of this? Because she would be so good in that role.
You know, there are lots of roles in the Senate. I think she would be terrific leader. But as you know, my uncle Ted Kennedy was not elected leader of the Senate, but really was the conscience of the Senate.
You're right,
and he got a lot done. And so there are roles. There are all sorts of roles in which you can make a difference. And I think she has to look as to what she's most interested in herself. And there are skills for different roles. There are parts that you play.
But I want somebody in charge of the Democrats in the Senate who's not afraid to take names and kick butt. You know, I'm so tired of Harry Reid saying, the Republicans say, oh, we're going to filibuster. Oh, okay, no problem. You know, we'll move on. You know, and I'm like, Harry, I'm going to strangle you.
But you know, you have to deal with what you've got. I mean, look, they filibustered the health care plan, the Medicare plan. Kennedy came. It was 59 votes. Mm-hmm. Ted Kennedy came, cast the 60th vote, and then nine Republicans came with him. So
that's right.
You know, there are times that.
But see, that wouldn't even have been a filibuster if your uncle Ted Kennedy, we're talking with Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, if he hadn't shown up. I mean, that's the thing. What Harry Reid has not done is what Trent Lott was forcing them to do. Remember the whole nuclear option thing, which is instead of simply saying we're going to filibuster and then saying, okay, end of discussion, say, okay, if you want a filibuster, you get to stand there for the next 16 hours.
Right.
You know,
right.
Have your aides bring you sandwiches, you know, we'll get a screen to put around you and a bucket if you need. I mean, you know, but you're going to stand there and talk, right? And that's what, you know, we're talking inside politics. This is
I thought last night, I thought really one of the great speeches last night, other than Hillary's, was the governor from Montana.
Brian Schweitzer.
Wasn't he fabulous?
Yes.
I mean, he made real what the energy crisis is all about and what we can do about it and how bad Bush and Cheney have been and how they have been the wrong leaders for our time. I think it's very important that the American people understand clearly what the choice is. I was just talking to another radio talk show host, and he was saying, oh, well, we need to drill, as though that was going to be the answer. And I think we've got to make sure that we get the message out that may be a dream, but it's not reality, and we've got to deal with reality.
Absolutely. Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, by the way, check out her book,
Failing
America's Faithful. It is absolutely great. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Kathleen, and nice to meet you. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Democratic Party is standing with Barack Obama right now, notwithstanding the bizarre coverage by the corporate media over the last few weeks and months. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jefferson Smith is sitting with me. He will soon be a member of the House of Representatives in the state of Oregon. He's the leader of the Bus Project, the founder of the Bus Project. And Jeff, I'd like you to you know, give a quick plug on the bus project, and then I got a whole bunch of callers here who've got a lot of great questions. You're a delegate. You're an Obama delegate. You've been on the floor. You've been here through all these gigs.
Yep.
First of all, let me just welcome you.
Oh, man, great to be here. Love the show, obviously.
Great to have you. And Jeff is a regular on our local show on AM 620 KPOJ as well. And then let's just get it in with mixed up with some of our callers. And
terrific. Yeah, I'll give a quick plug, but obviously the callers are more important than me. The bus project is a vehicle for hands-on democracy. Work primarily in Oregon. Started a federation of five states, getting young people particularly involved in democracy. Get on a bus, go around the state, engage people in the process, do some fun stuff like do it coming up this Halloween, trick or vote, a mass Halloween canvas. That's a little bit. We can go to the callers or you can ask more.
Yeah, well, trick or vote, is it just in Oregon or is it?
That's going to be 25 cities across the country. We've gotten 15 organizational partners, 25 cities and counting. We're going to knock on over 100,000 doors in a single day around time of Halloween, in costume, fun. The data says knocking on doors is the way to increase voter turnout, one-on-one contact. What's the one cultural tradition every year that involves knocking on doors? Halloween. That comes up always just a few days before the election. So we might be too old to trick or treat, but you're never too old to trick or vote.
There you go. And you just said the data shows. You shared a statistic with me on the local show with Carl and I a week or two ago that just blew my socks off. Tell us about this.
Yeah,
how do you change people's vote, basically?
Yeah,
how do you change their mind about who they're going to vote for?
Two different things. On the turnout piece, they did some. There is really good data on turnout. They tried paid phone banking, the kind of people that try to sell you a week in Las Vegas. And that increased voter turnout between 0 and negative 0.3%. That's pretty crappy.
Yeah.
Then they tried volunteer phone banking. That increased voter turnout between 2 and 5%. That's pretty good. And then they tried actually knocking on doors and talking to voters. And that increased voter turnout between 7 and 12%. That's a big number. Most elections you pay attention to are decided by less than 7 to 12%. So, again, that led us to this wacky idea. If we're trying to get a democracy that is more volunteer-driven, that isn't just pay-for-play, what kind of activities would be fun for volunteers? It would be a little bit, we have a little spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down. We thought a costume canvas on Halloween might be, you know, just the ticket. We tried this in our little town of Portland, turned into the biggest volunteer canvas in the history of our state, had 800 people on that day, 227 of them checked the box, first volunteer thing I've ever done. And so we said, well, why don't we share this with other organizations, about other folks do it? So we've signed on, Rock the Vote, Leah Young Voters, Generation Engage, United States Student Association, NAACP, lots of wonderful organizations to partner with us and take this thing national. It'll be a grind for the next couple of months, but hopefully it'll be a good start to a tradition that'll live past this election that'll continue to engage more volunteers in the process.
So anybody listening right now who wants to participate in Trick the Vote this year,
just go to trickorvote.org.
Trick or vote.
Trickorvote.org. You can see Dracula talk about his voting habits.
Great. Okay. Let's pick up some calls here. Glaston in Los Angeles. Hey, Glaston, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good.
I've just been listening to you for the past couple of days, man, and you're right on hitting it on the head as far as how I feel about this coverage. It's just close to sickening. You know, I never would look at Fox. I started off with CNN. I couldn't take it there. I switched over to MSNBC. Now they're starting. It's like it's just constant, the same beating of the dead horse. Just, well, how is he going to win over Clinton voters? And is it really that much of a problem? And it's just always the same negativity over and over and over again. And all the while we're watching this, Dennis Kucinich just gave a great speech at the DNC yesterday that was like totally missed, totally blown over. Nobody even covered it.
Yep.
And I just decided for myself, I'm switching over to C-SPAN and I'm watching the rest of the convention over there.
Spot on, Glaston, and thanks for calling and sharing that with us. A lot of people are saying this, Jefferson. The pool feed is coming out of Fox. Last night wasn't as bad as Monday night, but you know they love to do cutaway shots to people who look like they're bored. They're about to pick their nose.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's just and even the audio is bizarre. And their commentators are all hysterical about, you know, what's going to happen with Hillary when that's a non-event here.
It was a non-event.
And tonight with Bill, it's going to be a non-event. I guarantee
you. Right.
And Dennis Kucinich yesterday, I wasn't on the floor. Did you hear his speech?
I only saw a piece of his speech. I was in line waiting to get in. It took me a while to get onto the floor.
Well, I read this morning that is some of the local buzz that you know, the convention, and both conventions do this, and they've done this for a couple of decades. They vet the speeches before you give them, except for the very big dogs. You know, Bill Clinton's speech won't be vetted. Hillary's wasn't vetted. Obama's won't be vetted. But, you know, but basically the campaigns vet them. And Dennis Kucinich turned in his speech, and they asked him to take out one line.
Hmm.
And they asked him to. They didn't tell him to.
Yep.
But he did. And the one line was, I'm doing this from memory.
Sure.
We can't give the Republicans 4 more years. We can't even give them 8 more years. But as they leave office, they should get 10 to 20. So yeah. I wanted to get that on the record.
Exactly. At least we can at least get that message out to some people in Radio Land, even if they didn't get it,
there you
get
go.
It on C-SPAN.
Ben in Denver, you're on the air with Tom and Jefferson Smith.
Hey, guys. This is actually Ben from Aloha.
And, Ben, who drives the bus for the bus project in Oregon, and you're here in Denver. That's great. Ben is an old Marine, and every Wednesday for years he's been out there with an impeach Bush campaign. And I mean, this is 4 years now you've been doing this, Ben, every single Wednesday night?
Yes.
Yeah. So anyhow, you're here at the convention.
Tonight from 6:30 to 7:30. I want to say that the Washington County Peace Vigil. And Tom, you alluded a while ago to the fact that everybody should get in on this. I'll be 70 years old in a couple of months, and the bus project and working with these young people has been good for my health, but I hope to God it's been good for the country too, and anybody can do something.
It has certainly been good for Oregon. So Ben, you have a convention anecdote you wanted to share with us?
Well, I hope that I heard last night that my name and Matt Stein, the other driver, are in a lottery to get a ticket for tomorrow night's speech, and I hope things work out.
Well, good luck, Ben. Good luck.
Good luck to both of you, and thank you very much for this program.
You're welcome, and thanks a lot for calling in here. Greg in Cucamonga, California. Greg, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. I think your show is the greatest on the radio.
Thank you.
And I'd like to ask if anyone is preparing Obama, if Obama is preparing for the October surprise or an incident like in South Ossetia. You know, McCain is already prepared with a response, and when Obama was in Hawaii, he didn't seem to be prepared with a response at all, and they attacked Obama.
Yeah, it's kind of like
the Saddleback debate. You know, McCain knew the questions ahead of time. So if you have contacts or some way to get to the campaign,
I guarantee you they're well. Greg, thanks for raising the issue. I guarantee you they're well aware of it. Jefferson, we're talking with Jefferson Smith here. Busproject.org, by the way, is the other bit. Trickorvote.org. I'm looking at these headlines. I told Susie Turnbull this. The headline in the Los Angeles Times today, why was Cheney's guy in Georgia before the war? Cheney's top national security advisor was in like the week of the war. 3 weeks before the war, Karl Rove was in Yalta with Saakashvili, the president of Georgia. The day that Georgia starts at midnight raining bombs down on Svengali, the capital of South Ossetia, John McCain is out there going, oh, we got to take on the Soviet Union. And it's like, this looked to me like this is manipulating foreign policy for a campaign. You know, anyhow, any thoughts on this? I mean, you've been in the middle of politics for a long time.
Yeah, my own impression is that it would be nice, you know, very often when you're a kid, you play the game of if you had a superpower, what would your superpower be?
Right.
And my superpower was very often is to find out stuff. Right, there's various things I would just love to know, even if I couldn't do anything with information, just to know. I'd like to know what involvement Ronald Reagan had with the Iran hostage affair. Right,
read Barbara Honegger's book, right. October Surprise.
And to think that there has never been any involvement of political operatives in national security activities and in international activities, so as to influence domestic elections, I think is relatively naive. Obviously, whether I'm 51%, thinking that
it goes back to McKinley.
I'm not sure, but yeah,
it goes back to McKinley.
Exactly, Remember the Maine. I mean, it's not
exactly. And Karl Rove says that he patterned himself after McKinley's advisor.
Right.
I'm forgetting the guy's name at the moment. But
is it Hannah?
Mark Hannah. That's right. We got 1 minute here. Christy in Ann Arbor. Quick one.
Oh, Tom, I sat next to a Russian immigrant on the train on the way home from Chicago, so it was like 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I had to ask him about Georgia. And he said that Saakashvili is worse than Putin and that Saakashvili has basically crushed the people in South Ossetia and the Rivo Anacostia. and they don't want to be part of Georgia.
Yeah, well, and keep in mind, this is the guy who seized the television station that, oddly enough, was owned by Rupert Murdoch.
No, this guy said the BBC is wrong, the Canadian news is wrong, all the news we're getting in the United States is wrong.
But see, the BBC has been reporting this straight up. They were reporting right from the very beginning that Saakashvili started this thing.
I don't know. But it's just a plain old...
You can trust me, because I watch BBC News every night before I go to bed. And they actually have been... They're the only agency. But you're absolutely right, Christy. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. Jefferson Smith, the Bus Project, busproject.org, trickorvote.org. Jefferson.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom. Please, everybody, support the show. It's really important.
Bless you. Thanks a lot. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Indeed. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And let's see here. Catherine in Florida. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Your
phone is breaking up, Catherine.
Okay, I got an AP umbrella. I'm so sorry about that. I just wanted to make one point. If we go back into the time of the primaries when Tony was in the New York Times where he quoted that if another war breaks out, this is what John McCain needs to become a commander-in-chief. But if you can connect the dots to it, we go right down to the Russia-Syria problem and Georgia problem, and everybody that's in state talking about war and about him being a great commander-in-chief, everybody is on his campaign.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Catherine, I agree. The thing stinks to high heaven, and I hope that somebody will do a really, you know, probably it's going to be Larissa Alexandrovna or somebody like her, you know, one of these really, really good investigative journalists, just ferret all this stuff out and just lay it out before us. But thank you very much for the call. Garrett in Petaluma, California. Hey, Garrett.
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? Good morning to you. First thing I want to say is, I guess you didn't get invited to the wiretappers ball, huh? The, AT&T, throwing the party for the Blue Dog Democrats.
Yeah, I read about that.
Kept them out of jail, yeah.
Yeah.
The question I have for you today is this, you know, we've got extremists that we've had to put up with for almost 8 years now with the Republicans in Congress. We've got, violent extremists in the White House. Now we've got these corporate extremists in the media, like Fox News, that's providing the feed to the other networks. America sees in their living room is coming filtered right through this, you know,
through
these extremists.
Yeah.
And everything you said yesterday really touched me, and I watched it very closely. I've written and produced over 300 television commercials. I used to be in that racket for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they cut away to Obama in the living room and they had all those camera problems all of a sudden, you never saw the happy white family while Obama was in Kansas City in the living room.
Right.
And I really was looking. Well, I've got two wishes for the new year. The new year, I got one for Obama and one for your listeners. What I hope is that Obama takes his self-appointed FCC and investigates to find out if Fox News is indeed a legitimate network.
Yeah, well, increasingly the question is, what even is a news network
or
a network that produces news? Because, I guess it was during the last year or two of the Clinton administration that CBS was the first that said, okay, our news division is no longer a separate division. It's now under our entertainment division, and it's a profit center. And in my opinion, at that point, CBS ceased to be a network that could claim itself to have a news operation. And frankly, I think all of them have. And there's this patina of journalism and news. And you know, and frankly, on both sides. But it's all the corporate side. I mean, you know, there are some who are kind of the corporate Democrats and some who are kind of the corporate Republicans. But,
oh, absolutely.
You
know,
yeah, across the board.
Gary, well, I wish for your listeners this next year when we do have a sane administration and an adult administration for a change, that we can start getting the money out of politics. Campaign reform is the most important thing. Without that reform, we can't have any other reforms.
Absolutely right. I think, and we also have to get the money out of big corporations. I mean, the bottom line is we need to start enforcing the Sherman Act and breaking them up. Garrett, thank you very much. Brian in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, Brian.
Good morning, Tom. First, I want to say I heard Bernie Sanders earlier on another show. He's terrific, and kudos to him. He needs to get out there more. And secondly, I was wondering if anyone is addressing the issue of voter caging or any of that there. Is anyone concerned there at the convention? Anybody talking
about that? I haven't, walked up to anybody and said, what do you think about the voter cagings? And I can tell you that it definitely will not be on the official agenda. The Democratic Party is still operating on the belief that if they actually caging is more, something that they're probably more willing to talk about. Certainly the voting machine thing, they're just not willing to talk about, and which I think is a tragedy. I think it's a horrible, god-awful mistake. I haven't heard anything about it, and which is,
well, somebody's got to get on this before.
The convention isn't
the polls.
The convention isn't the place to do it. Because the convention is supposed to be about the vision for the future and who we are and where we're going and all that kind of thing. The place to do it is in a press conference in front of a courthouse or in front of the office of somebody who's doing it. I mean, it needs to be an expose. But you're absolutely right. The whole issue of voter caging needs to be one that gets out there and gets out there a lot. Brian, thank you for the call. Ron in Seattle. Hey, Ron.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, nice talking to you, Tom. I really appreciate your program. I think you've helped us through some hard times here. Anyway, I watched the convention last night on C-SPAN, and I happened to catch the Dennis Kucinich speech, too. That was a great one.
Uh-huh.
But I'm a Hillary backer and have been since about mid-campaign. I wasn't at the beginning, but once she hit her stride, I could see that she knows how to use her passion to get people turned on. And I hope
she does.
Barack takes advantage of that and starts to talk that way. And
he will be. He will be. And Hillary Clinton gave an absolutely barn burner speech last night. She did. It was wonderful. And Ron, thank you very much for the call and for the support. Rad in Chicago. We just have a couple seconds left here. Rad, quick one.
Yeah, I've been watching the DNC coverage on PBS Channel 11, the Jim Lehrer show.
Yeah.
And I've noticed from their coverage, they let the speaker speak, and the talking heads are not over talking the speakers, and I'd like to see that because I get my own impression. So I don't know what PBS is nationwide, but I'd encourage all the listeners to tune in to PBS.
Yeah, they've been doing a pretty good job. Although they had David Brooks on, and last night David Brooks said that this looked like North Korea, where everybody was saying "Hail the Great Leader."
Oh, and I got my caging letter.
Oh, you did? Oh
yes,
no!
VoterParticipationCenter.org.
Oh, geez.
I'm on the south side of Chicago, so
yeah.
I got that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck, Rad, and let your elected officials know about it. Call your member of Congress and let them know about it. Thanks a lot, Rad. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program right here on Air America Radio.
This is Tom Hartman. Now, live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings. Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Breaking news. This is from the wire services. Former President Bill Clinton's speech at the DNC on Wednesday night. Tonight will be broadcast on a 5-second delay, similar to that used to screen callers on talk radio programs, party officials confirmed today. Loretta Sanchez is getting this horrified look on her face. The five-second delay customarily used to censor callers who might use profanity or other unacceptable speech on a radio show has never before been used in the broadcast of a speech by a former president. But convention planners, nervous that Mr. Clinton might depart from his prepared remarks in an unacceptable way, said they were using the delay just in case. Chairman Howard Dean said, "We hope and expect that Bill Clinton will give a stirring and perfectly acceptable speech. However, if we see his face turning red and his forehead starting to throb, we'll be there to pull a plug." No, it's not actually the news. I'm sorry. It's Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. I just, you know, we share these things with our listeners. Loretta Sanchez is with us. You and your sister, Linda, are both members of Congress.
Absolutely.
Welcome.
It's true.
By the way, welcome
She's
to the show.
She's come to play in my sandbox.
There you go. And you are representing California's
47th. That would be
district.
Like Anaheim, there. California, the
yep.
happiest place on earth.
And Garden Grove and Santa Ana and Fullerton
That's
and Orange
correct.
County.
That's correct, Orange County.
I think
great bastion of Democrats.
We're live on KTalk in Los Angeles right now. So
wonderful.
Throwing a signal down into that area. And you have a new book out with a foreword by Nancy Pelosi. It's actually hitting the stands this week, Dream in Color, How the Sanchez Sisters Are Making History in Congress.
That's correct.
And you're calling out the lechers in Congress?
Well, my sister seems to think that there are people who are a little grabby in the Congress. I mean, I guess, you know, I've been there a dozen years now, and maybe I'm getting a little older, so there aren't so many outstretched arms, but definitely there are a few of those guys in there who
there are some gropers
aren't very
in the,
good,
oh,
yeah.
Geez.
So she's so. Definitely mentioned it as one of the drawbacks of being in the Congress.
Huh. Who would as a member of Congress,
as
you get
member
other
of
members
Congress.
Of Congress,
yeah,
the female members of Congress
yeah,
get literally
yeah,
groped?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. some days.
Amazing.
You know, I mean, I'm used to slapping them around a lot.
Good.
They know
back.
Better.
How is
I
it
train
here?
Train out every morning.
There you go. How is it here? How's the convention going for you?
The convention is good. It's way too much work, I got to tell you. I mean, yeah. I am getting up at 5 o'clock in order to be here in the morning to do interviews and things on TV and radio, and then it goes on for a while, and, of course, there's all this Secret Service and all this. You can't get in. You can't go here and show your pass and do that. And then we get out of here, and we go and we do, you know, the panels and speaking engagements to the different caucuses, and then lunches. There's like 3 or 4 lunches you got to attend and shake hands and take pictures and stuff, and then you come back in to do some more press, and you got to be on the floor. You got to cast some votes tonight. You got to go get your seat. You got to figure out where you're going to be tonight in the arena.
Cow.
You got to, you know, then afterwards at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock, as the case was last night, you got to do follow-up interviews. Was Hillary really good, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go back. You want to change your clothes at the hotel room about midnight or so to go and party, but it's like, hello, I can't go and party and be up at 5 in the morning again. It just doesn't work for me.
Right.
So my young staffers take all my party tickets, and they go play.
Well, that's good. I mean, there's some benefits.
Can you imagine that?
By the way, the folks in our chat, we run a live chat room while we're on the air. They want to know if the gropers are by and large Republican or if this is bipartisan in Congress.
It's bipartisan.
Okay. Welcome to the wonderful world of testosterone and human nature, I guess. What can we say? I apologize on behalf of my gender,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, you should.
Yeah, you're right. So, Loretta Sanchez, Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, what, you know, there's unanimity, I mean, right across the board, other than Dick Morris, of course, who is going to try and turn anything into anything, but that Hillary Clinton didn't just give the speech last. She knocked it. Well, I think Matthews said she knocked it out of the park across the road into the, you know.
Hello.
Yeah.
She wowed.
Yeah.
There is
you were on
no
the floor
other
when
word
it happened.
For it. I was in the box with President Clinton, and I have got to tell you, I felt little tears coming out of my eyes when she talked about that woman with cancer with the
yeah.
bald head with the Hillary paint
yeah.
on it. My heart just broke open. I saw the president be very wistful, you know, very almost to the point of brought to tears. And, you know, she did a great job. First and foremost, for anyone out there who doubts, if you would have cut her out off 2 minutes into her speech, what you would have heard in those 2 minutes was, hey, we are united, and we are united behind Barack Obama.
Right.
No ifs, ands, or buts. No one can say she didn't come out and do her job. And you know what? She is a professional. She is gracious. She is competent. She has feel to her. I mean, you could really feel the story she talked about last night. That was an amazing, amazing night in the arena.
Absolutely. I realize you're in the House and not the Senate, but would you join my campaign to have her become the next Senate Majority Leader? I think she'd do a great job. Actually, you don't have to say whether you join it or not. That could be political, because I know you don't want to do
Hey, look, I have backed her all the way for president. You know that. I think she's just amazing.
I do, too. And I think
and you know, people don't remember that when we were in our darkest years, after 1992 with the Wonder Kid, oh, yeah, the agent of change, President Clinton came in and he couldn't get things done, and Democrats lost the House and the Senate in 1994. It was Hillary who went out on the campaign trail and brought in the money and went for the candidates to start to build back, to bring back the majorities in our House. So I can't say a bad thing about her.
Yeah, and this is here we are now in the second Bush recession.
Oh,
I mean,
this
has
been awful. Gosh, guys, vote and vote Democrat up and down that ticket. We have had enough of these guys. You all out there do not even understand how bad our situation is. I'm so disgusted by these people.
Absolutely. And in fact, the vote and election day is just the beginning. We have to get active and stay active.
Absolutely.
Right on through. Loretta Sanchez, the book Dream in Color, How the Sanchez Sisters Are Making History in Congress.
Comes out Saturday. You can buy it at Amazon.com and your favorite bookstore. Bye, bye, bye. We love you.
Thanks, Loretta. It's great to have you with us. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back with Terry Jeffrey.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
Minutes past the hour. Well, maybe it just became 18 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Fair and unbalanced? Yeah. Fair but slightly unbalanced. Terry Jeffrey, the editor-in-chief at CNS News, is on the line with us. Terry, I'd like you to play a dual role here today. First of all, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
You are far more well-versed in the perspective of the conservative blogs and right-wing websites and you know, the buzz on Fox and all that kind of thing than I am. I've frankly not had the time to pay attention to any of it. And so I'm curious what the buzz is out of this convention from the people who are definitely going to be voting for McCain or for whom McCain is even too liberal. And also I'm curious about your own personal opinion of what's going on here.
Well, the buzz I've heard pretty much coincides with my own opinion. I'm just looking right now at the new Gallup tracking poll for today, which shows Obama coming back up over McCain 44%. The same poll yesterday, Tom, had McCain 46-44 over Obama. Second thing put out by the Gallup poll today says conservative Democrats are moving away from Obama. There's about 27% of self-identified conservative Democrats say they're not supporting Obama. That's a bigger chunk than he had a few weeks ago.
But does that mean, by not supporting, does that mean that they won't vote for him? That they won't vote for John McCain, or they're going to stay home?
They're supporting McCain, actually. So
they're not Democrats.
These are self-identified conservative Democrats. They ask Democrats and Republicans whether they're liberal, moderate, or conservative. And
sure.
27% of self-identified conservative Democrats are supporting McCain, here's how that plays into my thinking on this. And just, I think, you know, James Carville said Monday night that the Democrats had wasted Monday night of their convention. I think he's right. I think last night wasn't as much of a waste because Hillary Clinton lined up behind Obama. I think she gave a good speech. I don't think it was as good.
And she lit into McCain.
A little bit. You know, she said McCain's, I'm surprised the Democrats haven't gone harder negative on McCain, made more of the case against McCain, particularly with their set, you know, people like Governor Warner, for example. Why isn't he, you know, tarring McCain? That ought to be his job at this convention. I don't think they made a strong enough case against McCain. I don't think they've, I think really they did squander the first night. They didn't get as much last night as they should have got. It's getting late in this convention. And
you know, in a way, it's an echo of 2004, because Kerry's people had actually put out the message, no trashing Bush at the convention. We're going to make this entirely upbeat, which was insane.
Well, right. I mean, I don't think they should go after the guy personally. I don't think the Republicans should go after Obama.
No, I'm not even talking about personal attacks. They wouldn't, you know, basically, right. They didn't even allow policy attacks 4 years
right.
ago.
Right. Well, that's right, Tom. I mean, I think this, the whole Democratic convention so far, it's light on policy. It's light on the big issues that would motivate primary Democratic core voters. Where's the Iraq War? The Iraq War is not an issue at this convention. And even the economy is only a light issue at this convention. I'm very much surprised that the Democrats aren't taking a harder look at the Bush administration and McCain and making the negative case against the Republicans. I'm saying that as a conservative.
I have a strong feeling, Terry, that tonight Bill Clinton is going to just kick John McCain up one side and down the other.
Well, I think he needs to, quite frankly, if the Democrats want to get what they need out of this convention.
I agree. And one of the interesting observations that many of my listeners have shared with me, and that I, when I first was watching, I thought, geez, am I, you know, just, you know, hallucinating or biased or something? You know, Fox is providing the pool coverage for this thing. And Monday night when Michelle was talking, most of the cutaway shots were people who looked like they were bored, people who were talking to the person next to them, particularly if they were white. And an awful lot of African Americans, and which is, you know, reasonable and appropriate at a certain threshold, particularly because this is a historic moment. I mean, here's an African American first lady. But I think that the subtext, the subtle subtext that particularly the white viewer in the Midwest who tends towards, I don't want to say racism, but, you know, just the other, you know, is that this convention was mostly either African Americans or white people who didn't care what she had to say. Did you get any sense of that watching that? And has there been any discussion at all? I mean, there is some discussion about this over on the in various left wing blogs, on the right.
Well, first of all, I did not notice that, and I did think last night during Senator Clinton's speech that the cutaways were very positive for Senator Clinton. A lot of them were to her husband, and, you know, he knew, obviously, he was on camera. When she started talking about kids, they were focusing on kids in the audience. I wasn't looking for that in Michelle Obama's speech, and I don't know. I will say this. I will say certainly there are in this country racists who would never vote for Barack Obama because he's black. But I don't think that's going to prevent Senator Obama from being elected president. I believe he has a good chance of being elected president. It's not as good a chance as I thought a couple of months ago. I think this is going to be a very close race. I don't think it's going to be decided on race. It's going to be decided on substantive issues.
Yeah, I broadly agree with you on all those issues, except for the Harold Ford ads. I mean, we saw this before, except for the fact that Roger Ailes made his first chops in politics in 1968, playing the race card for Richard Nixon, organizing his little town halls. That this has been, you know, part of the woof and weave of Roger Ailes' entire, the arc of his career, and certainly a lot of people in the Republican Party ever since the Southern Strategy came in. So I'm sure you're getting these emails that I'm getting from God only knows who, but they're ubiquitous. I mean, they're just everywhere.
Actually, Tom, let me be very specific and look at it very analytically. I think this, in a way that people, you know, they can double check what I'm saying by looking at the exit polls themselves, looking at these Gallup polls. The swing vote in this election is not a racist vote. The swing vote, everybody knows what it is. Barack Obama knows what it is. It is more traditional, more conservative Democrats in northern swing states.
Yeah, more or less. But here's, you know, Terry, if I may.
They're not racist, Tom.
No, by and large, I agree with you. I'm agreeing with you that race is probably not going to be the thing that turns this election. Although, as I said, they were saying that in Tennessee before Harold, what was it, Corker, the guy who ran against Harold Ford, Jr.
Right.
Before he ran that ad about Harold Ford was at the Playboy Club raising money, and then they showed this cute white woman going, "Hey, Harold, give me a call," and, you know, that turned the people who maybe weren't thinking about being racist, whatever. I mean, it brought out the racist vote. You have to acknowledge that.
But
he was way ahead until that.
Look, in this election, why did Obama pick Joe Biden? Now, I think it was a bad choice myself, politically. Joe Biden's an affable guy. He's got a lot of experience. But there's two reasons, I think. One is because of his foreign policy credentials. The other thing is because Joe Biden is a Catholic. And in fact,
I don't think it was either one of those reasons. I've met Joe Biden. Joe Biden is absolutely friggin' brilliant. He was one of the smartest men I've ever met in my entire life. And he knows foreign policy inside and out. He's the perfect complement to Barack Obama. I don't think it's, I mean, you're Catholic. I mean, maybe you're sensitized to it. I don't know, but I think that's a bonus.
Well, when he introduced Joe Biden, Barack Obama called him a committed Catholic.
Sure.
Clearly it was in his calculation. I think clearly he's seen this exit polls where those Catholics in those states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, they were going heavily for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And those people are not racist, and they're not going to decide whether to vote for Barack Obama or not.
And having a Catholic there doesn't hurt. Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. Terry, we have less than a minute left.
Sure.
What about the concept, I think it was John Podesta who shared this with us yesterday, or maybe it was Bob Borisov, that, you know, the swing voters, they're dumb. I mean, they tend to swing on things that aren't, you know, that you and I would say, this is the trivial stuff. Let's get out the unlikely voters, the people who typically just don't even vote.
Right.
On both sides. I think both sides need to mobilize. Let's get more people involved in American democracy.
Well, I thought that was why Obama was going to win, because he's developed tremendous enthusiasm among new voters that he can get out to vote. If he wins, that will be why. He's got to have get out to vote Trump. The fact that more conservative Democrats are probably going to go with McCain in November.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's rare we agree, but here we do. Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief, CNSNews.com. Terry, thanks for dropping by.
Good to talk to you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Chickens in the ghost chickens in the sky.
Uh-oh. It's our pigeon alert. An alert listener let us know about this. Thank you for listener Josh. Headline, pigeons in custody for smuggling drugs to Bosnian prisoners. Bosnian police have impounded a pigeon after discovering prisoners used it to smuggle drugs into one of the country's highest security jails. Let's see, if it's a highest security jail, there's probably, like, some really high-level folks in there. And, of course, the pigeons, the people of the robots from the planet Xenu, the people from the planet Xenu would want their robots to spy on them, right? Agence France-Presse says the guards suspected the animal might be involved in drug smuggling once they noticed four prisoners visibly intoxicated shortly after the pigeon landed in a prison window. All four men tested positive for heroin. They got a pigeon bringing them heroin. Tell me these things are not robots. You never see baby pigeons. You never see dead pigeons. And wherever there's important people, there's pigeons, right? So, anyway, maybe not. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Kyle in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Kyle, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great.
There was something that you were mentioning in the show the other day that I wanted to bring up. Well, actually, you know, from your previous guest that you just had on, mm-hmm. he mentioned that he thought that Obama needed to target the, you know, quote-unquote conservative Democrats.
Yeah.
It's always this idea that politics is two-dimensional and that they need to move more to the center. My personal opinion is the biggest lie of this election is that it's close. Because
yeah,
if you look at the numbers, for the primaries. Just looking at the voter results, like how many people turned out and how many people signed up, the Democrats are winning this by a landslide.
Yeah.
I mean, they had literally had, if you look at the primaries in states where the Democrats would have 100,000 people show up, the Republicans would have tens of thousands. You know, yeah, and it was just the numbers by themselves show that there's a landslide for the Democrats right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think that it's possible that it is close, too. And in part, that was that the Democratic primaries produced a lot of passion. The Republican primary produced almost no passion.
Right.
And so, I mean, you had Republicans who were unhappy with their choices. And so they weren't showing up. I think that was a big factor. But they're going to, you know, they're good soldiers. The Republicans are good soldiers. They're going to fall into line.
Well, you know, what's interesting, though, is that, and maybe it's just me here in Michigan, but I've been, you know, actively campaigning for Barack Obama and for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've noticed is that I keep talking to Republicans who say that they're either not going to vote this year or they're going to vote for the Libertarian.
Yeah.
And it literally seems like, you know, there's all this excitement for Barack Obama's campaign, even among the people, the Hillary supporters. I like you said, I have yet to find a single Hillary supporter who says they're not going to vote.
Yeah.
Or that they won't vote for Barack. Yet John McCain's campaign literally has all the excitement behind it of mandatory overtime. And
there you go. And yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see it play out, Kyle. I have a hard time on the one hand thinking that these pollsters, particularly since there's so many competing polling companies, and I don't know John Zogby as a friend or anything, but I do know the guy, and he has a lot of integrity, and his vote and his polling company, I think, has a lot of integrity. So I have a hard time believing that the polls are just like, you know, made up out of nothing. But on the other hand, what we saw after the election in 2004 was, you know, the exit polls clearly showed that John Kerry won, not just in Ohio, but in several other states where the electronic voting machine said that he lost. And what the polling companies did after the election was over was they recalibrated their polls. And I wonder if they're recalibrating their polls right now, saying, okay, you know, because clearly they're not picking up, for example, the large percentage of people under 30 who don't have a landline. They have a cell phone, therefore.
Well,
they
under 40.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll tell you this, Tom. I work for Verizon, and I don't know of many people under 40 who have landlines anymore. In fact, the smallest division in the phone company now is the landline division.
Right, and that's where all the polling is going on. So they're waiting for that, and it may be that their waiting factor is just, you know, off, weird, wrong off the scale. That's the only thing I can come up with that is a not conspiracy theory explanation, if that makes any sense. Whoops. Something just happened here. We just lost our listener. And apparently Brett in Illinois is now on the line. Hey, Brett.
Hi, Tom. Since you're there in Denver, I just wanted to see if you can make a couple things happen for me.
Okay.
What we really need right now is a John Kerry Band-Aid. You know how that...
Oh, yeah. When they did the Band-Aid with the Purple Heart on it at the Republican convention, that was such a slam. I mean, such a below-the-belt hit. You're suggesting something similar to that should be done here?
I have two suggestions.
Okay.
The first one is to have people jingle their house keys, you know, during some of the speeches.
That's actually, you know, that's not below the belt. I mean, because the Kerry thing with the Purple Heart, that was based on a lie.
Yeah, that was below the belt.
This is based on the truth.
And then the second thing would be to, I don't know, maybe give out packages of Kleenex with the package printed on there saying John McCain's economic policy, you know, stop whining.
Yeah, interesting. That would take some planning, and that's not possible. But let me talk to some folks about the key jingling, Brett. Thanks a lot for sharing that. I think it's a great idea. And I'm sorry we dropped you off. I'm just getting used to this computer. Jimmy in British Columbia. Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
Hey, I just got a comment here. I'm out in British Columbia. My brother's in Virginia. Yesterday around 5 o'clock Eastern time, he called me and said that there was some guys that got caught getting ready to try to assassinate Obama.
Yeah, it turns out it wasn't
and,
the case.
And
was
at the actual getting ready, I guess, for him to appear, whether it's at the DNC or in the stadium there.
No, it's been blown all out of proportion by the media. And again, one of these things that, you know, they apparently they caught some guys with some guns who just happened to be guys with guns. I mean, this is Colorado. And you know, it was a non-event. But the media just loves this kind of stuff, and the Republicans just love this kind of stuff because it plays into the fear that so many people have because Barack Obama is this melding of Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, and who were both assassinated. And I think it's a god awful horrific thing to even discuss and bring up. And that's why the Republicans want to bring it up, because I think that they think people will be afraid and not go to the polls or whatever. I don't know.
Well, the only problem that I have with that is that my brother said that they actually he caught a clip of an interview with one of the guys. And basically, he fessed up to, we were getting ready to do it, and you people wouldn't understand why and whatnot. And it just seemed really weird to me that, he saw it on the local news there, and it took me 2 hours of watching CNN for them to say something about it, and then it took another hour and a half for them to show it, and then they chalked it up to, it's just some meth heads talking out of their heads.
Yeah.
But yet, it's funny that they're all talking the same thing, and that somebody, apparently some woman that knew them, called the police. So
yeah,
just wanted to,
they may be saying,
see if you knew anything about it.
What I'm hearing here on the floor and what I heard from the news folks that I talked with this morning is that it was a non-story, and that, they were probably saying what they were asked. I mean, very often, you ask a leading question, you'll get a leading answer. But, we all need to keep an eye on this, but I'll tell you, the security here is mind-boggling, and it will be throughout the campaign, and it will be throughout Barack Obama's presidency, I'm sure. And it's tragedy that we live in a country where for some reason over the last, 50-100 years, it's always the progressive Democrats who get assassinated. But it ain't going to happen this time, and we just have to hold that.
Yeah, I really hope not. And I just wanted to touch on one more thing. It seems like a lot of the Hillary supporters are kind of whining, man. And, it's sort of like, let's get the party together. And
they're
and
not, Jimmy.
Stop
what,
the in-house what, fighting, man.
The whining that you're hearing is the probably a fraction of 1% that the media are able to dig out of the woodwork and put in front of a camera because it makes a good media story. I've talked to a whole bunch. We had, Loretta Sanchez on just a few minutes ago. We've had a number of Hillary's, and I've talked to a whole bunch of Hillary delegates, and they're all, she lost, Barack won, we're behind him, we're Democrats, we're going to make it happen. But, Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. Paul in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great. What's up?
Good. I was saying, was watching the other night, flipping around, I guess, like everybody else seems to have been doing, and unfortunately landed on O'Reilly's show, and he had a pollster on, and they were doing these different commercials, and they came on the one that the Republicans had put out about Resco.
Mm-hmm.
And how the people that watched that, all of a sudden, when you had personal corruption, or so to speak, their integrity went all the way down, and they weren't going to vote for him. I guess my question is, why is nobody picking up on the Keating 5 situation with McCain? And why is not that coming out if you want to talk about personal corruption?
If I was advising the Obama campaign in a Machiavellian way, if I was advising them how to use that as an attack against John McCain, because the Republicans in particular are vulnerable to character attacks because they vote more on character than they do on issues or on their perception of character. I would tell them to wait on that until October. Roll that thing out in October, in the middle of October, the last 3 weeks before the election. That's when you drop your biggest bombs. And McCain has a very, very, very dirty closet with regard to the Keating 5. And if the Democrats aren't mentioning it now, I hope it's because they intend to mention it in October, not because they're just incompetent.
Do you think they will?
I sure suspect they will, Paul. And if they don't, there's a whole bunch of us out here who will be. It's going to happen. Yeah, thanks a lot, Paul. I appreciate the call. It's 45 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, our live chat room, AirAmerica.com. If you check out Tom Vision, there's actually a button up at the top of TomHartman.com to take you right to it. And we're live here from the DNC.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
I think Republicans are starting to understand it's going to be Barack Obama, and it's going to be, hopefully it's going to be a great election. We are all, very concerned about the you know, where the polls are going and everything. I mean, we've got to blow this thing out. We have sitting with us right now is Dr. Susan Rice. She is the senior foreign policy advisor. Let me get this. The foreign policy advisor to Senator Barack Obama. She's also on leave from the Brookings Institute, where she's a senior fellow in foreign policy, the former assistant secretary of state for African Affairs during the Bill Clinton presidency. You were the foreign policy advisor for the Kerry Edwards campaign. Welcome, Dr. Rice.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Tell me if I'm being totally paranoid here.
Yes.
I am, in all probability. The Los Angeles Times this morning, headline, why was Cheney's guy in Georgia the day before the war? What was the top national security aide to Vice President Dick Cheney doing in Georgia shortly before Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili's troops engaged in what had become a disastrous fight? 3 weeks before the war, Saakashvili was in Yalta with Karl Rove, 3 weeks before the invasion. John McCain had his talking points about the invasion the day after it happened. And Barack Obama was on vacation in Hawaii. And then on top of this, John McCain's senior foreign policy advisor, Randy Shuneman, received $800,000 from Saakashvili. You know, I mean, he's writing the checks on behalf of Georgia, $800,000 to lobby for this country. Am I a conspiracy nut?
I don't know what conspiracy you're weaving, and I don't want to presume to guess
it. Okay, all right.
Where are you going with that?
My concern is that the McCain campaign, in collaboration with Cheney's office, is using foreign policy as a campaign tool. And I would say that given what happened in 2002 with Iraq, this wouldn't be the first time they've done it.
Well, let's just say that it does raise questions when your chief foreign policy advisor, in this case Randy Shuneman, until just a couple months ago, was a paid lobbyist for foreign governments. That creates at least a context in which people may scratch their heads. In this specific case, however, of Georgia and Russia, whatever the backstory may prove to be, if any.
Right.
I think the important point is the fact that we have been, for over 5 years, singularly focused on one country in the world, and that is Iraq. The Bush-McCain policy has led us to a place where we have been unable or unwilling to recognize that there are many other serious challenges out there in the world that we have either dealt with sporadically or not at all. So, you know, we abandoned to a substantial extent the fight against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and what's happened? The Taliban and Al-Qaeda resurgent. Osama bin Laden remains on the loose, and we are more threatened by Al-Qaeda terrorism than we were several years ago. Russia has gone from a country led by somebody who President Bush looked into his soul and saw a soulmate,
right,
to some very aggressive and illegal action in the region. And the United States was engaged in a herky-jerky kind of foreign policy.
Yeah.
Where on the one hand, you know, we had a soulmate. On the other hand, you know, Dick Cheney was talking about the evil empire returning. And all the while, we were fraying our relationships with our European partners. John McCain called France and Germany, quote, adversaries in the run-up to the Iraq War.
Right.
And so when you think of your allies as adversaries, you're not in a position to come together in common cause to confront aggression, which we now face with Russia.
This
is a failed foreign policy, failed judgments that we need to get rid of. We cannot afford four more years of these failed Bush-McCain foreign policies that have left us
Absolutely. Isolated
and less safe and bogged down in a war that
you're singing to the choir. You're singing to the choir. Absolutely. And in fact, these guys over the last 8 years have elevated foreign policy and competence to an art form. I mean, it's incredible.
It's not limited to foreign policy. It's just,
you're absolutely
recall
right.
Katrina. And
yeah,
the other.
Yeah, and economic policy in general. We're talking with Dr. Susan Rice, foreign policy advisor to Senator Barack Obama. At this moment, as we speak, Dr. Rice, Cindy McCain, is on a plane flying to Georgia. What is the Obama policy with regard to what happened with first the the opening salvo, the bombing of Svengali, and then the invasion of the Russians, and now the, you know, the whole thing. I have a feeling this is going to be a big issue.
Barack Obama saw this coming, and on April 21st, he issued a statement, and he said this many times subsequently, that this is a very precarious situation with respect to South Ossetia and Abkhazia, Russia and Georgia. And that the proper approach, which he called for back then, was for the United States and our partners in Europe to be actively engaged in a diplomatic effort to try to defuse this conflict before it blew up. He also called for the replacement of these so-called Russian peacekeepers, who were anything but peacekeepers, with a truly neutral international monitoring presence. And, you know, the Bush administration, John McCain, were focused on Iraq and other things and didn't give this the attention that it deserved. So Barack Obama has demonstrated not only foresight and the correct judgment on these issues, but he's been very clear in the way forward. We need to condemn this Russian aggression and make it clear that there will be consequences, and indeed dropping the Russian stock market is indicative of the fact that there will be consequences. But secondly, that we need to stand with Georgia in its reconstruction. He's committed with Joe Biden to $1 billion in reconstruction assistance. To my knowledge, John McCain hasn't said anything specific about what he would do if he were president.
Maybe Cindy's going to go over and write a check for $100 million.
Well, there you go.
She
or give him one of their houses.
That's right.
How about that?
Or two of them. Or three. I don't know. But it's we have just 30 seconds left before we have to wrap this up at the top of the hour, and the clock is going to... The biggest foreign policy issues that you see on the horizon.
Well, Tom, unfortunately, because of the failed Bush-McCain policies of the last 8 years, there are many. We've got to get out of Iraq responsibly. We've got to turn our attention urgently to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We've got to continue to play a constructive role in trying to broker peace in the Middle East and tackle energy security and climate change, which is a crucial challenge of our generation.
And these are all...
Among others.
Among others. Dr. Susan Rice, thank you so much for the great work you're doing and for your insights.
This is Tom Hartman. Now, live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver. And Elijah Cummings is with me, the congressman representing the 7th District of Maryland. You were born and raised in Baltimore. You were the first speaker pro tem, is that the phrase?
Of the House, yeah.
First African-American speaker pro tem. And seven terms.
Is that what
it's called? Yes. And it's a pleasure and an honor to have you here with us.
It's my pleasure.
And you have been involved in the Barack Obama campaign virtually from the beginning.
That's right. As a matter of fact, actually, before it actually started, Barack called me on in January when he was driving from the game where the Bears had qualified for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And called me and said, Elijah, I want you to run my campaign in Maryland. I said, campaign for what? He said, campaign for the presidency. I said, presidency of what? He said, of the United States of America.
And you were being serious.
Yeah, I was serious. And I said, one question, can you win?
Yeah.
And he said, I will win. I said, sign me up.
I have a friend, an African-American down in Los Angeles, who came on our program, in fact, and early on, and said that he was going to support Edwards early on simply because his entire life he had confronted so much racism in America, he did not believe that it was possible that Obama could even win the nomination, much less the presidency. I think that, you know, for many African Americans, this has been and for white Americans, I mean, you and I were talking before, I said, I think this is a watershed moment. This is a turning point in the history of this country.
No doubt about it. I'm often asked the question of, for example, why did not the Congressional Black Caucus, and keep in mind, Barack Obama is a member of the Congressional Black Caucus.
Right.
Why did less than half of them originally support him? And I think it's for the very reasons you just said. The experience of some older folks is that they have one experience of race.
Yeah.
A younger generation, and who, you know, Barack appeals to greatly, have a whole other experience of race.
Right.
And they don't see race like an older generation. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white.
Yeah. No,
and so I never dreamed, and I'm in politics every day. I've been in politics since 1982.
Yeah.
I never dreamed in my lifetime that I would see someone of color get to this point, nor did I dream that I would see a woman do what Hillary Clinton did.
Yeah.
And so I think what it says is it definitely this is a watershed moment. But it also, no matter what happens, we can clearly say that our country has come a long way. And I think the game or profession or whatever you may call it of politics shall forever be changed.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This is one of those times. You're the son of sharecroppers.
Former sharecroppers.
You got halfway there. I mean, here you were.
That's right. I mean, when I think of my own life, when I was a little boy, my mom and dad were from Manning, South Carolina, and they moved to Baltimore in 1944, and then we would go back to visit my grandmother. And I shall never forget, at around about the age of 7 or 6, my grandmother would, as soon as we got to town, she would sit us down and she would say, "Look, if a white person is walking anywhere near you, you put your head down. Don't ever, ever look at a white woman, ever."
Yeah.
And this was
the Emmett Till days.
Emmett Till days, that's right. And so for me in my lifetime at 57 to have experienced that and to have experienced situations in Baltimore where as a child in the 1950s we literally would go to one or two stores downtown and African American people would line up. I mean, I'm talking about 300-400 people to get in a store. And I said, "Mommy, look at all these other stores. Why are we just going to this store, that store?" And she would say, "They won't serve us."
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and now to see Barack Obama at this juncture is major.
Yeah. You and I are the same age, and I think that and I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and I remember a few white only or colored entrance,
sure,
those kind of things, and the water fountain and the public pool, and it, by and large they were mostly desegregated by the time I was,
sure,
10 or 12 years old, but it was there.
Yeah.
It was there, and we all grew up with it, and I think our children,
mm-hmm,
and grandchildren's generation, they have no, they didn't grow up through that.
That's
they don't
that's
have a
exactly
sense of
right
it, and what a good thing it is.
That's right.
Thank
that's
God.
That's right.
Okay, what does Barack Obama have to do to win the presidency?
What he's going to have to do, first of all, let's go back to what you were just talking about. I do believe that there's something called the Bradley effect, and that is that no matter what your poll numbers may read when there is a person of color in a race, that people are not going to always tell the truth.
Have you seen this in your own races?
I've seen this, yes, over and over.
Yeah.
We saw it in North Carolina when Jesse Helms was running against Harvey Gantt. We've seen it in other places. So, first of all, I believe he goes in, and he knows this, really wanting to have at least a 10-point lead.
Yeah.
In other words, going into on election day.
Yeah.
And I think that he may lose 5 to 6 percentage points because of people won't tell the truth. There are some people that are simply not going to vote for a person of color. But thank God there are a whole lot of people who will.
Yeah.
And so what he's got to do, though, is he's got to make people feel comfortable with him. I heard a lot of commentators say the other day when Michelle Obama made her presentation, she said, "Why did she do that? She didn't state any policy objectives. She didn't do this. She didn't do that." Well, she needed to introduce who she is and who her family is and who Barack is again to the American people.
Well, and what she needed to say to white America, to that probably majority of white America who have never had close friendship contact with black America, is, "My life was just like your life."
That's right. That's
I grew
right
up the same way you did.
That's right.
My I love my family. My
That's
mother
right
loved me. My father loved me. My brothers, sisters, mm-hmm, just the whole, just break down all this nonsense about their separate worlds, their separate cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It's
amazing.
And that's what she did brilliantly, by the way.
You know, it's amazing as you're saying that, I feel emotion welling up in me, because I think so often white people think that that black people don't go to church or we don't struggle, and that we, I look at my own life. My mother and father, I was in special education, and my mother and father, my mother came up to Baltimore having been a sharecropper in South Carolina, and she was a domestic. My father was a laborer.
Yeah.
And they worked hard, very hard. My father had a saying. He said, if you miss one day of school, one day, that meant you died the night before. Yeah. So I never miss one day of school. My point is that a lot of the same things that all of America goes through every day.
Yeah.
African
Americans. These are our shared experiences. But our media has not portrayed them as shared
experiences. No, they have not.
And
so what happens, I mean, but this is the key. The reason why it was so important for Michelle Obama to do what she did is so that she would let America know that I understand what you go through every day.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to worry about your children when you're at work, to, you know, to make the PTA meetings, to do all of those kinds of things. And I also know what it is like to be around a father who may have difficulties or may have disabilities. Yeah. That when she said the thing about her father with two canes and suffering from multiple sclerosis, to walk with two canes to her mother to give her a kiss,
yeah.
I'm telling you, in the section that I was in, listening to that speech, there was not a dry eye.
Yeah.
It and
was
so,
a beautiful speech.
And but what I'm saying is that she had to do that. Now, yes, what does Barack have to do? I think what he has to do is make people realize that he's not the boogeyman,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that he is prepared to lead. And so, and I think a lot of people, there's another piece that a lot of people don't, they subconsciously want it from Barack, but they don't necessarily know it. I think what Barack and Michelle present is that family
mm-hmm.
that America is striving to be every day.
Yeah.
You know, there's been so much attacks on the family from every single direction. When I'm telling you, a lot of people don't realize it. I get email from a lot of women's groups, and they send a picture of Barack and Michelle hugging and whatever, and they say, this is what we want
yeah.
for ourselves and for our nation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We just have a minute here left. Yeah. We're talking with Congressman Elijah Cummings from the 7th District of Maryland. This election is probably one of the most important in our lifetimes.
Right.
You want to riff just...
No doubt about it. I think because when Barack Obama says we need to turn the page,
yeah.
he's talking about reordering the power bases in our country. Right now, money talks loudly. He's trying, by only accepting certain types of contributions, he's saying, look, we're not going to do it the same way. And he's talking about a changing world where people have more power. You rarely hear him say I. He usually says we,
yeah.
talking about we join together. And so I think we're going to see a big difference, and I think America will be pleased with his leadership.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. And you know, from your lips to God's ears, let us hope that we're going to work for it.
Yeah, you got to work.
We're going to make this man
president. No doubt about it.
And the day after he's elected president, that's actually when the work begins.
That's right. That's
because
exactly
then we've
right.
got to support an agenda that makes these things happen.
That's exactly right.
Congressman Cummings, thank you so much
thank
for dropping by.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. Great to see you. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
Back, Tom Hartman here live at the DNC. This is very. First of all, just you know, bring you up to date on what's going on. Monday night, AT&T threw a big party for the. Well, it's referred to in the media here as the Blue Dog Democrats. I think it went a little beyond that. Steny Hoyer was there, and there's a great story about this over at CommonDreams.org. A number of us tried to get in, you know, people who were bloggers and writers and actual real press tried to get in, and they were told, sorry, this is a closed event, no press. Nothing but lobbyists and the Democrats who helped pass the telecommunications immunity for AT&T bill and AT&T running the party. And then, now change topic, we'll segue to another, on MSNBC... these pundits, you know, Scarborough and Chuck Todd and Andrea Mitchell are sitting around talking with David Gregory about Charlie Crist, the governor of Florida, and whether he's getting married, not because he likes girls, but because in order to become a running mate with a Republican, you have to be a guy who likes girls. And Alex, if you can pot up the audio here out of my computer, this is an interesting little conversation. It's It's not coming through loud enough. Oh, it's not coming through at all. Huh? You got a pan straight up? Okay, we'll figure it out. I will have to share. I'll share it with you a little later on. So, bottom line is Scarborough. The question comes up, and Scarborough says, "Did he actually get married? I thought he was engaged. Is he engaged or did he get married?" And then Chuck Todd says, "After Friday, the engagement might be off if he's not the running mate, right?" I don't know. And then they all laughed, and then Andrea Mitchell goes, "That is so mean." And Joe Scarborough goes, "Wow." Yeah. So, yeah, it's tough to be a Florida Republican. It's tough. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Margaret in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Good show. Thank you. I was listening to the fellow who talked about the keys jingling, and I feel like it would get lost in the din of that enormous amount of people in that convention center, and it just popped into my head. It's like, well, what about a placard, maybe even purple, but actually I think red, white, and blue would be better, that literally just said, "No fear zone."
Yeah.
No fear zone.
That's
I have felt that for 8 years when it all started coming down on us. I had this feeling I would love to have a bumper sticker that just said, "No fear zone. I'm not going to buy into the fear." And I don't believe that at this point, 7.5 years later, that at least 70% of us no longer buy into this fear. This is not our way of life, and this is not how we're going to proceed, because the fear is just insecurity. It's manipulation and everything else. So, I don't know. I'd just love to see that. And the other thought that happened was maybe, the fire marshals might have an issue with this, but what if it just, everybody lit a candle? Remember 9/11 and the ceremonies that night for the World Trade, night after night of candles in New York, in London, in Katrina.
That's a little kumbaya, Margaret. I think it would be a wonderful thing. But the point that was made by the caller earlier, as I recall, it was a caller, might have been one of our guests, with which I strongly agree, is that the Democrats need to start hitting McCain hard. And lighting a candle is not hitting McCain hard. Jingling house keys, if it was organized, this is the problem. The Republican Party is so organized that they'll go out and they'll get Band-Aids with Purple Hearts printed on them. They'll get them into the convention. They'll distribute them to everybody. They'll have everybody raise their hand at the same time with the same Band-Aid in the same place. You couldn't do that with the Democratic Party because it's like trying to herd cats.
Yeah.
That's the extraordinary and wonderful thing about the Democratic Party, but that's the Democratic Party. But Margaret, thank you for your thoughts. We've got to take a break here in just a minute. Kim in San Francisco. We got 60 seconds. Kim, what's up?
Okay, I'm going to be brief. I'm cynical. I'm a good Democrat. I have worked phone banks. I've run phone banks. I've done more GOTV work than anybody I know. However, at some point, I became cynical about the entire process, and I backed off. So I'm not looking to fall in love. And, Tom, when you worry about the poll ratings, I think sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. Your endomorphins are sky high right now. There's some of us that are cynical. There are some of us that are ignorant. We're not looking to fall in love. What we want is somebody that's going to do what we want them to do. I have problems with certain parts of the Democratic plank, but when you look at the difference between the Republican and the Democratic Party, you have to say the closest thing. If you've ever called yourself a Democrat, you have to say the closest thing that I can come to what I want him to do is to vote Democrat.
Yeah. Kim, if you've ever called yourself an American, that's what you have to do. Because I would assert that the Republican Party, let's bankrupt our children, literally, so that we can have tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. Let's have wars in foreign, lie ourselves into wars in foreign places. These are not even American values. Thank you, Kim. I appreciate the call. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado. And sitting across from me, Ned Lamont, one of my heroes. He's the chairman of Lamont Digital Systems, candidate for the Senate from Connecticut, lost in a tight race against Lieberman. His website, nedlamont.com. Ned, welcome.
Hey, Tom, it's great to be back. It's great to be back with Air America.
Yeah.
Because, you know, early on in our campaign, we were having a hard time finding oxygen anywhere. Air America really airs out the grassroots. It was just invaluable to helping us get our campaign going.
Thank you. And I think all of America is mourning the fact that Joe Lieberman is in the Senate. I mean, it's just, it's like, I'm curious, you know, I want to talk to you about the convention and everything that's going on here, you know, as well. This certainly it's a topic du jour, but how are the citizens of Connecticut treating you these days? I mean, do you get a lot of people walking up to you in supermarkets going, "I'm so sorry, I voted for Joe. I had no," you know, those kind of things. I mean,
I get every time Senator Lieberman gives another speech where he attacks Obama and attacks the Democrats and impugns people's patriotism,
right.
I get one of two different types of emails. Lamont, you son of a gun, you liberated this guy. Look what you've created.
Uh-huh.
Or Lamont, you were right. You've exposed this guy. Now we know who he really is.
Right. Which is true.
Oh, I got in that race 2.5 years ago. I'm not surprised by anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in our race, during the primary, Joe ran as the real Democrat and accused me of being a false Democrat. During the general election, he said, "I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm independent and above politics." And here we are 2 years later, and he's John McCain's top attack dog, going after Obama, going after Democrats, impugning their patriotism, saying they'd rather lose a war if it jeopardized their election. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, it's beyond outrageous. I mean, it's, well, I guess outrageous is a good enough word. Your thoughts on this convention so far. One of the concerns that I've heard echoed by a number, in particular a number of the people who are either delegates or just kind of, you know, I heard, you know, a fellow this morning, he said, "I'm just one of the little people." You know, it was just one of the folks who was showing up here. It's a phrase that makes me cringe, but that the so far, I mean, we're 2 days into this thing, and there's really only been a couple of light slaps on the face to John McCain. And this is, I mean, politically speaking, for this thing to work, he needs to be taken down. I mean, you know, I have to be very careful of my metaphors here. We're talking about presidential candidates, but politically, this guy needs to be knocked out of the race.
Look, I'm sympathetic. That first day was sort of all Biog and introducing the Obamas, and this is, they have the family values
important.
In the American.
Very important.
That it, and we got that established.
You know, more kumbaya, you know?
Now let's go at it. I agree with you. I think it's really time for us to show, in no uncertain terms, we're going to do that tonight. While you talk about national security, you talk about being ready for commander-in-chief. Look what McCain and Lieberman and Bush have done to this country. Well, you know, people are talking about the surge is working. My God, the week after McCain and Lieberman wrote that piece, "The Surge is Working," you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad from Iran was welcomed as a conquering hero in the downtown Baghdad.
Right, and he didn't even have to walk with a flak jacket. You know, I mean,
he's like, flowers were being strewn on the most dangerous road between the airport and downtown Baghdad. Does he go to the Emerald City? Does he go to the Green Zone? No. The head of Iran stays in one of Saddam Hussein's palaces. We have just enabled one of the most dangerous men in the Middle East. And this is all on Bush's watch. It's been 100% endorsed by McCain and Lieberman. You know, my God, I think it's time for the Democrats to hold these people accountable, and I hope they start tonight, because I'm ready.
Yeah. I have a feeling Bill Clinton's speech tonight is going to be a take-no-prisoners speech. He certainly has the ability to do it, and I think right now he has the inclination.
Let it rip.
Very, very strongly. Absolutely. We're talking with Ned Lamont, who unsuccessfully ran against Joe Lieberman in the... you all know the story. And
beat him in the primary.
Are you
just
got to
finish the job.
It's another 4 years, right, before it's been...
Senator Lieberman's seat is not up for 4 years. Yeah. You know, in the meantime, I've been really active in the state. We put together a strategic plan for the state of Connecticut. I've been going around campaigning on behalf of some of our Senate candidates.
Good.
Just to make sure no one senator is in the catbird seat this coming November.
Right.
I'm on a couple of boards that I really care about, the environmental and education areas. So I'm keeping my eyes open. Maybe do something with President Obama if I got the opportunity.
That's great. That's great. Would you be interested in taking a couple of calls with me?
Yeah, let's do it.
Get some of our listeners involved and see what they're thinking about and what their concerns are. Prez in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Prez, you're on the air with me and Ned Lamont.
Who?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tom. And hi, Ned. I sympathize with your plight, and it was pretty weaselly what Lieberman did. I wanted to say, mainly I want to talk about McCain. There's two things about him. I have a campaign slogan when I'm done here. I'll be real as quick as I can. But McCain's POW thing, he keeps putting it out there. It's time for us to go directly at it, a la Rove. And from my understanding, there is evidence that North Vietnamese guy in charge of their prisoners said twice that McCain was not tortured. McCain recently hugged the guy in public on some conference, and also he said that McCain was never tortured twice. He said this. And also, McCain was offered a chance to go home in March of 68, and he refused to go. And he made 32 propaganda films. We need to hit that and hit it really, really hard.
Prez, it's a tough one, and what's tough about that, and thanks for the call, what's tough about that is that, A, we don't know. You know, and B, I mean, you know, he was a veteran. And I just, you know, my personal take on it is I know that there's a website out there called VietnamVeteransAgainstJohnMcCain.com. And, or maybe it's .org. I'm pretty sure it's .com. And they've got a bunch of video. They've got, you know, people who were in prison with him, I mean, who are attacking him, who are really going after him. But I just don't think that that's what the Democratic Party should be doing.
I think I'm with Tom on that. Look, we got enough material on John McCain on the issues. He was dead wrong in Iraq. It's $1 trillion later. Tens of thousands of dead and wounded. He's dead wrong in Iran. Bomb, 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 bomb Iran. He was wrong on Georgia. He wants to kick Russia out of the G8. Let's hit him where we know we've got the facts on our side.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And let me add, if some 527 wants to come along and swift boat John McCain, I'm not going to stop him. But, you know, I just don't think that the convention is even the place to, you know, to go there. Is it Tehran in Seattle?
Yes, how are you? Good afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Tehran.
Hi, good. This isn't really related to the conversation you guys are having, but this is a bit of a criticism about your show. I was really surprised you had Elijah Cummings on there. He's the first black person you've had on the show this summer.
Thank you very much, Tehran. I'm taking guests as, you know, the folks here on Radio Row are booking our guests, and we're not doing, you know, gee, how many black people can we get on or how many white people we can get on? We're getting the guests as they're... Actually, Dr. Rice, who preceded him, is also African-American. In fact, we've had a couple of African-Americans on. I guess you need to be watching Tom Vision, you know. What can I say? Phil in Tempe. Hey, Phil. You know, not everybody talks the same. Phil, you're on the air with Ned Lamont.
Yeah, Tom, Mr. Lamont, welcome. You've been talking about the feed.
The pool coverage is the video feed that everybody's seen is coming from Fox News.
Yeah, well, the feed that you get is from Fox. It's just of the podium. The breakaways are from all the other networks. So
they are.
That and one other thing. Karl Rove, when he was over in... Georgia. He was also with Bob Schrum.
Yep.
You're really getting a reputation as an unhinged conspiracy kook with all this stuff.
Okay, thanks a lot, Phil. Yeah. Karen in Miami, Florida. Hey Karen,
what's up? Thank you.
You're on the air.
All right. Tom?
Yes.
Hi, this is Karen. I'm in Miami. I think that some of your guests today have had a point, especially your black representative from, I can't recall his name now. I was actually in my pool when I heard him, from Maryland.
There's Elijah
race,
Cummings.
Yes, race is a huge issue in this campaign. In Miami particularly, I remember the Kerry campaign where I saw nothing but Kerry stickers everywhere I went. I mean, I was so surprised when he didn't win. Of course, I know why he didn't. But anyway, this time, the people that I know who have never voted Republican in their life are not voting for Obama because he's black. And that is an overriding, that doesn't matter about issues. It doesn't matter about anything you're going to say about McCain.
Yeah.
The people that I hear are not voting for him strictly for that issue, and also the emails that are bombarded every day, the fact that he's Muslim and he's this and that, and you, you write them back and you say this is totally not true, and you give them the facts, and you never hear anything back from them.
That's right.
I
yeah.
think it's a huge issue in this campaign.
Well, you don't hear back from them because, A, they may be, those emails may be coming from the machine, and, B, there's some people who are just like, you know, my mind is made up, don't confuse me with the facts. But thank you, for Karen, for raising the topic. Ned, you want to riff on that?
Yeah, Barack Obama is a relatively new candidate to an awful lot of people around the country. You and I, we followed him in the primary. We know him. We know he's ready to be president of the United States.
By the way, so is John McCain is relatively new, actually, as well. I mean, the people of Arizona know his voting record, but that's
people are going to reserve judgment. They're going to get to know this man over the next 60 days. They're going to have three debates, that final debate in Hofstra University. People are going to look and say, Barack Obama is ready to be commander-in-chief and take this country in a new direction. And at that point, I think you're going to find an awful lot of people who had one hesitancy after another. For a few of them, it was race. They're going to come behind the Obama campaign.
Yeah.
I think he's going to win. I think he's going to win significantly because they want him to have a mandate to get something done.
Yeah, I agree. I you know, it is, this is, I believe, the most significant, most important election of my lifetime. This country has gone so far off the rails. We have gone so far away from the democratic principles we were founded on.
Let's bring it back, and Barack Obama will bring it back.
There you go. Ned Lamont, nedlamont.com is website, and keep up the good work, sir. Good talking to you. 45 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Well, it looks like the police are rioting. I am the folks in the chat room just sent me this link. I am watching this video here. Alex, we'll see if we can play the audio for it. It's mostly just crowd noise, but beep that. You're not hearing anything. That's good, because there was an obscenity in there, so I'm glad you didn't. Bottom line, we had the police were going through in their little golf cart thing, and there were protesters surrounding them, and they said, move away, and there was a woman standing nearby, and she said, I won't do it again, and she's backing up, and a cop walks up with a baton and just slams it into her chest, and she goes flying backwards. And it's not quite, you know, what we saw in Chicago in 1968, where people were being beaten bloody, but it's not good video for the Denver Police Department. It really isn't. Bob in San Francisco. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Oh, yeah. You know, they're letting John McCain off the hook. You know, he was involved with Charles Keating in the Keating Five. All they have to do is Google.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier in the show. In my opinion, my hope. Actually.
millions of dollars to bail out that Lincoln Savings and Loan scandal with Ken and John McCain was right in the middle of all of this. They said this guy is so filthy and dirty with taking money behind. He's like Richard Nixon. He
yep.
should.
Bob, you're spot on. And you know, so Neil Bush was in the middle of that as well, and I was always astounded that the Democrats didn't use that either. So we'll see. Ron in Elk Grove. Hey, Ron.
I think a lot of people are trying to play the race card, the Lester Maddox card. That's ancient history. I think the vast, vast majority of people do not have any qualm whatsoever of voting for the first Anglo-African candidate, or even if he was 100% African-American. In Iowa, recall the first part of the primaries, it was Anglo-Americans, when the African-Americans weren't yet on board, that carried Barack Obama through these early victories.
That's right.
And so forth, and New Hampshire was thrown. And the truth is, people view McCain as some kind of Freddy Krueger-type character operating on less than a full deck, who, if he managed to get in there, would have his foot, finger on the button, you know, and with Lieberman, you know. But let me just make a final point. The name of the game for Democrats is addressed. All the media mumbo-jumbo, the national polling crud and the phony polling, and it's a bit, you know, it's a close race. Hillary didn't just said enough, you know. The Shyster effect.
Yeah.
They shystered it in 2004, and they rove shystered it in 2000 in myriad ways, caging, phony polling, and setting up. That's the name of the game to win it.
Yeah, I think the Democrats absolutely need to expose how corrupt John McCain is. I mean, this should go without saying. And earlier I said maybe they're not going to raise the Keating 5 now because they're going to raise it later. Frankly, they should raise it now. They should raise it next week. They should raise it next month. They should call him, you know, John McSame and John Keating 5. And yeah, absolutely. Jimmy in South Carolina. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, you know, I'm a traveling sales guy. I live in Atlanta. I'm in South Carolina today. And I get exposed to the South all the time. And I get to talk to a lot of people. And, you know, I'm a, liberal as I can be, progressive. And obviously, I'm not surrounded by a lot of that. But I got to tell you something. I have rarely seen a less effective Democratic campaign. Well, actually, I've seen a lot of them over my life. But the Hillary Clinton last night and the barrage of speakers, I mean, the Democratic Party should be able to run Charles Manson's corpse against John McCain and George Bush's record and be 90% ahead in the polls. Because the Republicans have been an outright disaster for the United States, bankrupting pretty much. I mean, I was challenged, say, if you're a Republican, name one thing that George Bush has accomplished that he can hang his hat on, and don't say we haven't been attacked again. But I mean,
this is the great conundrum, Jimmy, is that on the one hand we've got, you know, you're right. The Democrats should be able to prop up Charlie Manson and say, you know, this is, and people would still say, yes, I'll take him over, you know, another 8 years.
Because he's killed less people. He's been responsible for fewer deaths than
Yeah, absolutely. And yet we've got these polls. And the question is, why are the polls the way they are? This is, you know, one of the questions.
Because the Democrats will not verbally grow a pair and attack the Republicans for their absolute corruption and incompetence.
You're absolutely right. At least as part of the problem, the corruption of the Republican Party and the corruption of John McCain in particular needs to be exposed big time. Patrick in Miami, we've got a minute here before the end of the show. Patrick, what's up?
Tom, just got a couple statements, man. The woman who called from Miami.
Yeah.
There's no signs for McCain either.
You don't see any McCain signs.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little early in the political season for there to be political signs out, you know?
Well, and if they are, I run them over. But getting to what the last guy said about the polls, too.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't think anybody's been called by a traditional pollster. They're not targeting my generation. The guy who has two cell phones, whose wife has a cell phone, who doesn't answer the home phone.
Yeah.
So they can't tell me that McCain's caught up and he's ahead. My vote hasn't changed.
Yeah, it may well be that McCain is caught up and he's ahead among the folks who are watching, you know, the CBS Evening News with the Geritol commercials. I mean, it may well be. It may well be. And if so, I would be astounded that pollsters are that dumb. Or it could be that, you know, they want it to be a close game so that there's more business for the pollsters, there's more money for the networks. I mean, who knows? Or so that it's close enough that they can steal it and say, yeah, we didn't steal it. It was close. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow here broadcasting live from the DNC. Tom Hartman with you. Don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.